You are now listening to the Experience Magazine podcast in association with CEIA. Thank you for listening. This podcast is only made possible by listeners like you. We appreciate you, and we hope that you continue to experience with us. On today's episode, we have special guest Dr. David C. Caffo. Serving as Director of Experiential Learning at Wilmington University, Dr. Caffo has 12 plus years of experience in higher education. In 2010, he was charged with the task of developing a new cooperative education department for the university. While building this new program, he took pride in advising students, working with employers to develop opportunities, and work diligently to incorporate real-world experiences into the academic curriculum, utilizing co-op as a course modality. In 2016, the Cooperative Education Department he developed was reformed into the Office of Work Integrated Learning and is now the university's one-stop shop for internships, cooperative education, and service learning experiences. In 2018, the Office of Work Integrated Learning was again reformed, becoming the Office of Experiential Learning, wherein his responsibilities evolved to include credit.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Experience Magazine podcast brought to you by CEIA. The goal of the Experience Magazine podcast is to provide space for both content creators and content consumers in the world of experiential and work integrated learning. Listen to interviews with scholars, practitioners, students, employer partners, and other thought leaders in the field. It's an exciting time to be involved in the world of experiential and work integrated learning. Through the Experience Magazine podcast, we will share best practices, discuss lessons learned from peers and colleagues, and explore new and innovative practices in our field. I am Eric Allenson, joined as always alongside my co-host, Michael Sharp. Mike, how are you, my friend?
Eric, I'm doing well. Recovering from Halloween. I may have had a large amount of gummy candies, and I know you're a big fan of gummies.
So personal favorite.
My kids brought home little bags of gummy bears and then even some worms. And so I had to check the candy to make sure there's no razor blades and nails. And so I may have taken all of their gummies.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important fatherly responsibilities, right? Is quality assurance of candy on Halloween.
That's right.
Making sure there's nothing in there that could be hazardous. And often that means, you know, sampling and taste testing.
Right. I mean,
it's part of the job, right?
Yeah, it's hard to be a dad, but you got to do what you got to do, Eric.
That's true. We sacrifice.
So, Eric, we have another fantastic guest here today, Mr. David Caffo, who, if you recall, we've been trying to get Dave on the show for, I think, several years now. And he kept hearing about you and your lackluster performance on the show. And so I finally talked him into it. But I think he was timing it for when he's the president. So Dave is now the president of CEIA. So the timing of this is great. There's some really cool, exciting things coming down the pipeline, which you'll talk about today. So let's go ahead and get started. Dave, welcome to the Experience Magazine podcast. How are you?
Hello. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Eric. Pleasure to be here with you today, and I'm doing well. Thank you. And I'm recovering myself from having way too much Halloween candy here in the house since we only had two youngsters stop by in their outfits, and their whole families were dressed up. But, yep, there's a little quality assurance going on here with leftovers. So
I'm right. It has to happen. So, Dave, you have quite the bio, and I know that you've been in the world of experiential learning and higher ed for 12 plus years. Mm-hmm. And we understand that you're currently serving as a director of experiential learning at Wilmington University. So for our audience here, can you share a little bit about you and about your work at Wilmington?
Oh, goodness. This is a loaded question. Sure thing. Well, let me tell you a little bit about how, you know, I sort of stumbled into this, as most of us have. Just as most people in your audience, I had a vision board And my astronaut at the top of the vision board growing up was director of cooperative education, a small private institution, right? No, I kid there.
I was going to say that's
my history out of college, and I won't date myself here, was, you know, I was in various sales positions, from working all throughout college and high school and restaurants to software sales after I graduated, to office supplies. And then I eventually got licensed and worked my way into the financial world, which was a little bit more in line with my consumer economics, human resource degree that I got at University of Delaware. And then basically worked into the finance world for a number of years. Again, I won't age myself, but in 2008, 2007, if you remember the economy, about 160 of us that I was in the same position with were laid off across the country. And took some time off at that juncture and decided, what am I going to do? And went back to school, got my MBA actually at Wilmington University, did some consulting work for them. Really we involved with curriculum development. And in particular, we worked with an MBA program. Since I was in that program, it was sort of a thesis, if you will, developed an MBA program for physicians. Now, the second biggest employer in Delaware, where I live, is Christiana Hospital System, right? The first is the government, right? The second is the hospital system. So this seemed to be a lucrative avenue to go after physicians that were looking to transition from either surgical practitioners to administration. So we came up really with just sort of putting a label on a master's program, MBA program for physicians to transition them into working behind the scenes in administrations and such. And at that juncture, really what happened was they liked the work that I did for Wilmington University and offered me a position. So I came in through the admissions department and worked with recruiting and then sort of worked my way in various different hats at Wilmington University until one day I was tapped with the idea of creating a cooperative education program. So it was a very direct line from my vision board as a child to getting to this role that I'm in now.
Yeah.
Dave, I love seeing all of those non-linear trajectories of the various career paths of our guests because, yeah, just I think if anything, for students that listen, hopefully it is a little bit of a relief to know you don't necessarily, none of us have it all figured out, right? We're still evolving and growing and changing all the time. And yeah, it's great to hear stuff like that. Dave, you mentioned this a little bit. When you came into your role, you were working in a cooperative education department. It has since transitioned into the Office of Experiential Learning, and it's this one-stop shop for internships, co-ops, and other forms of EL. Can you talk to us a little bit more about your office and kind of maybe the genesis or in the evolution of the office from this name change of co-op to experiential learning, I assume being a little more broad.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This is an interesting story as well in terms of its genesis. As I had mentioned before, I was working in admissions department and working with high school recruiting and all areas of admissions, if you will. Don't know if you know Wilmington, Delaware. People sometimes think that it's North Carolina, some small town, or if it's Wilmington, it's some small town in Ohio. Who knows, right? But in our backyard here is Drexel University. Hmm. And they have a pretty well-known co-op program that they have there. And my president, you know, being a relatively small private school, you know, I was on a first name basis with the president, being that prior to my existence at Wilmington University, my mother used to work there. So I knew a lot of the people that worked there and was tapped one day to say, hey, listen, I want you to build a Drexel cooperative education program. Now, I'm not going to go into a 25-minute conversation here about how Wilmington University is structured, but we'll say that we are a commuter. I'll say this. We're a commuter school. There are no dorms, right? The traditional age student is in the minority, right? So we have older students is the majority. And so building a Drexel co-op program, which is in essence basically a five-year program, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be a good fit for Wilmington University, being that really, if you were to go to our website, it talks about accelerated pathways to your degree program, not adding a fifth year, right? So one of the hardest conversations I had to do was to go in front of the president after doing a lot of due diligence, Quite an interesting story about that is 2 weeks after I accepted this position of director of cooperative education was, you know, not even know how to spell cooperative education, was that I ended up in San Antonio at the CEIA, annual conference 2 weeks after I accepted the position. So don't know if anybody here that's listening has been to a CEIA conference. What tends to happen is they have a new members mingle, which we will have again, which I'll get down to in the road here. And everybody introduces themselves and says, how long have they been in the industry? And when I raised my hand, I said, 2 weeks, right? Learned a lot. And it was very accepting at CEIA's conference there. And then another tidbit here is the one of the first things that I did after that conference. Yes, I signed up for the Academy in Colorado to learn a little bit more, but I traveled to University of Cincinnati and met with staff and got toward the school and asked a lot of serious questions about, you know, if you had the opportunity, being that you're the oldest cooperative education program in the planet, and you had the opportunity to build one from scratch, what would you do? What would you omit from what it is that you've done, right? It's willing to bet that everybody working there wasn't there at its origin. I would assume 100 some odd years old. But it was great to just shut up, you know, ask those questions, shut up and listen. And I learned quite a bit from that. The hardest conversation that I had, and I'll reiterate this again, was to tell the president and the executive team that you can't have a Drexel cooperative education program here. If we're looking to accelerate through our programs, accelerate through curriculum here, you need to have something that plays with the curriculum that's already in existence, right? So went around and gathered best practices from our colleagues and peers in industry and tried to piece together what would work with our curriculum, what would work with our trajectory of our students that came through here. And it's interesting, for the first 3 years, we had a separate cooperative education department that I ran with myself, and that was it. And I know there's a lot of folks out there in our audience that are going through the same things. I get those calls all the time asking for advice. And I'm happy to talk people through the genesis of our program. And then we had a separate internship program that was within each of the individual colleges at Wilmington University. So don't know if I'm painting the picture correct here, but all of a sudden what happened was it was a direct competition with each other in terms of employers that were out there, in terms of students. You know, it almost seemed as there were some faculty members that were saying, you're cannibalizing our students, you're doing this. But I would say that it's the same, you know, our co-op program was always for credit, and you was still credit within those individual colleges with which the students were a part of. So just came up with a strategic plan and submitted a strategic plan to the executive team, which is all the vice presidents of the university and the president, saying we need to consolidate this into one office because here's what's happening. Despite of what our intentions were in the beginning, here's what the result of, you know, we were making data-driven decisions, if you will, based on the actual real world existence of these two entities. And they agreed, you know, be careful what you ask for, right? So what happened was they said, okay, we're going to combine this into one office. And what do we call it, Dave? And in doing my due diligence, one of the things that I heard the most of, we did a lot of assessments of students, assessments of faculty members, et cetera. And, you know, a whole nother side story would be that that was my dissertation at Wilmington University was on, was right, the existence of cooperative education in people buying into it from a faculty standpoint. And what we found is if people understood what these things were, experiential learning, oh, we completely would believe in it, but it was awareness, right? And there was confusion, I'm sure you've stumbled into, between what is an internship and what is co-op. And we spent most of our time trying to define the two and differentiate the two. So I said, okay, what's a better term that's out here that's easily an umbrella term to get all these things, apprenticeships, internships, cooperative education under one umbrella, and that was the Office of Work Integrated Learning. So that's what we called it once we combined it. Now, we've since continued to learn and continued to progress and grow this department. So much so that we used to have a separate office of credit for prior learning. Now, this is the other arm that's really maybe not, people don't dive into too much of experiential learning, right? Which is those that have experience in life and how are they awarded credit for it and how does a university or college take a look at this? The person who was running that department moved over to a different part of the university, and what they decided to do is move that underneath our umbrella, right? So I had to learn real quick join another professional organization and figure out, okay, what's this credit for a prior learning thing and certificates and industry recognized credentials and how does that apply to course credit and curriculum? And this is where the next iteration, I believe, you're going to see coming in all of experiential learning world is that the umbrella of experiential learning is going to be inclusive of credit for prior learning. And there are some other professional organizations out there that really deal specifically with that, Kale being one of them, that you know we're members of that helps us really align what it is that we're doing at Wilmington University. So we've become the one-stop shop, no matter whether we're gonna help you get credit or whether or not we're gonna award you credit, okay, through the experiences that you have in license certification. So I know that was a lot to pack in there, but just wanted to make sure you saw the whole iteration of where we've come and how we've stumbled into these things and been successful and successful at it. Cooperative education, now under the Office of Work Integrated Learning, right? So when we acquired, or I, under my supervision came the Credit for Prior Learning, arm of experiential learning under our umbrella. And just to give you, to digress here a little bit, our president at the university, when we combined offices, one of the, in terms of internships, apprenticeships, service learning, and cooperative education into one-stop shop and called it Work Integrated Learning, he was asking questions of me as to what are you running into in terms of obstacles? Now, I believe this is one of the most important things that I'm going to say here today in terms of relationship building internally. Right. And really what that was there, we've always heard these conversations about, administration versus faculty, et cetera, as it pertains to higher ed, which was something that I had to learn real quick. And I moved from private industry into academics. But one of the things in terms of being successful is to have strong relationships and make people feel included, right? Inclusive in decisions along the way. And the president asked me at the time, okay, what obstacles are you running into? And it was really getting a seat at the table as it pertains to academic decisions. Now we have something that's called academic council, which is all of the deans. There's a couple of assistant vice presidents and then the vice president of academic affairs that runs that. And to be able to get at that table, there's only one way to do that, and that's to become an academic college. So a number of years ago, our president of the university started a new college, and it was called the College of Online and Experiential Learning. So let me give you just a quick genesis of that. We are a very strong online institution. So when COVID hit, you know, the month that we went virtual, we were already running at about 65 to 70% online with our courses. So it was really easy for us to transition over to being online for all of our courses. So we were a little bit ahead of the game here as it came to that. So all of the online programs are run now through this college. And then all of the experiential learning aspects are run through this college. And we have a dean and a seat at the table as it comes to, as it pertains to academic decisions, et cetera. What a huge strategic move that was by a president in terms of if all of us know the struggles that we have with having conversations with academia, et cetera, having a seat at the table is a positive, right? So let's move on to the original question here. I know I just wanted to give that background. The original question was, okay, what's this 360 degree view of experiential learning, right? Or approach to experiential learning. Once we took under the umbrella of the credit for prior learning, wanted to make this palatable for folks and have people understand and remarket and rebrand these two different departments coming together as one. And I thought to myself, you know, no matter how you come to Wilmington University, whether or not we're going to help you get your experience, right, and fit experiential learning into the learning cycle and give you these engagements through experiences, et cetera, through internships, apprenticeships, and service learning, we can award you credit that way. And we can also award you credit if you come to us with industry-recognized certificates, vast amounts of managerial training, vast amounts of experience, et cetera. We do an analysis of that. We have content experts review portfolios that are put together for credit for prior learning assessments, et cetera. We have a vast list on our website of industry recognized credentials that have already been aligned to credit that in essence become transcribable events, just like a normal transcript coming from one college to another. Mm-hmm. So we've done some great work with that. So I tagged it and started putting it on everything. So all the folks that report up through my office basically say this, interpret this, because I wanted it to be branded and wanted it to people to understand that no matter how you came to Wilmington University, we take a 360-degree view of experiential learning. No matter how you come, we will award you credit and help you on your pathway to graduation.
Dave, that is brilliant. And I can see why that has caught fire. And I'm not surprised that people are willing to chirp that out. That's a really good way to describe how I think experiential learning and work integrating learning can and should work. If it's okay, I want to switch gears.
Quickly here, though, on that, if I could add one thing to that.
Yeah, of course.
People will always ask about how do you leverage work integrated learning, right? Internships, co-op, to be aligned with curriculum. Mm-hmm. If you think about the other arm of experiential learning here for a second, and this is one of the ways that I was able to work with faculty members, chairs of programs, et cetera, to get this into our curriculum, which is the next iteration of what it is we're doing here, which is actually embedding these experiences into the curriculum. But I would always say that, hey, we have these types of training programs, et cetera, that industry recognized that we're actually awarding, you being the chair of the academic program, have mm-hmm. awarded 3 credits, 10 credits, 12, whatever it may be. Okay, but what about our students that don't have that experience? What if that same organization that we just awarded this credit to for that employee, if you will give that same experience to a student?
Oh,
right. Oh, okay. So a student can come in there and get that same type of experience on location, right? This adds to the 360 degrees of experiential learning, in my opinion, because we can then say, okay, we've evaluated for credit from somebody who already had the experience. And then we also can tie that in and get leverage it for an internship at that company. So it's a way for a one or two person office to try to grow their placements, if you will.
That's great. That is so, so smart, Dave. You know, I think the big institutions could learn a lot from what you've been able to do here. I love that 360 degree approach. And I may start using that because that makes sense for what service learning does. I mean, that's what we try to do, is take this 360 degree approach for all of our learners. Dave, if it's okay, I want to switch gears a little bit. Mm-hmm. You are currently the sitting president of CEIA, which of course is the founder of Experience Magazine podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about some exciting things coming down the pipeline for the organization CEIA?
Absolutely. This is another one of those questions that I could spend a half hour on, right? There's just so many things that we're working on that it's really hard to summarize. But first and foremost, our board is a collection of rock stars, right? You're a member of that, so I would include you in that conversation. And just very proud of all the work that people do in their normal lives, right? And all the projects and work and things that folks are doing for our organization here. And as you know, one of our main focus areas is membership and value for membership, right? Mm-hmm. That has continued on. Over the course of the last couple of years, you've seen CEIA grow, in essence. You've seen the implementation of a business plan that the CFO strategically wrote with the president at the time to further give direction and sight to the vision or pathway to the vision for CEIA. Then you saw another iteration of that come out under Don Kelso's presidency, mm-hmm. where she said, okay, based on this business plan, here are these ad hoc committees that were put out there based on the vision of what it is we have. And I know I've heard her talk about that for quality outcomes committees. There were the DEI committees. There's the new members forum, which, you know, I was on the committee for that as well as Dawn created that committee. Those things we've continued on, right? And as a new president, folks come in and say, how do I leave a legacy? And people try to come in and do things. But here's the reality of the situation is that it's 365 days of presidency. It's not like it's a 3-year term, or you can't throw so much spaghetti at the wall and expect everything to stick. Right. So I took a step back and said, what does Wilmington University do on a day to day basis that's impactful for what it is that we do in a short period of time? And really what that was I took a look at the business plan, the strategic plan that each president in the last couple of years has put out in terms of its direction, in terms of here are these committees, directions, and charges, and said, well, I don't want to just take all these charges and continue the ones that we've done and then come up with three more and just add to the mix here. Really what I wanted to do is take a step back and say, how can we narrow the focus and then streamline what it is that we've already done a great job at, and then help the next presidencies do that even further, if that makes sense. Funnel it down to something that's manageable and workable. Now, as a member of the board, I'm sure you're familiar with something that I'm proud of is what we've done was we've taken a look at the business plan and all of those charges and then came up with four strategic initiatives for CEIA. That was directly taken from the vision and directly taken from the business plan that was created. And those four things are focusing on our members, implement DEI across the organization, increasing employer membership, and strengthening our organization. And if we could just focus through the lens of those and all of the actions that we do and all of the charges that we have and in the continuation of all of these things that have been implemented in the course of the last 3 or 4 years, we will be on that path. And it was through the lens of those strategic initiatives that was able to come up with a few charges that we took and worked on what it is that Don Kelso came out with in terms of the members forum. There was a committee that looked at quality outcomes. There was a committee that looked at a number of do we look at employers? Do we look at two-hand schools? There's just a bunch of committees that were there and focused it and narrowed it down into one committee, right, that will look at all of these different various aspects through the lens of these four strategic initiatives that are in line with the business plan. So very proud of what that is, and that's exciting because that's going to help Ross, who's our president-elect, and we've had conversations about how that's going to continue on in terms of the growth of the organization. Now, I'm happy to say that we're still continuing all the virtual offerings. In the light of what's happened over the course of the last 2 years, it's exciting to see that people, you know, I know that there's a bit of fatigue that's out there, and as we all are on these virtual platforms, but I'm happy to announce that there's still a strong commitment of our members connecting and networking with each other and our peers, right? So I'm happy to say that we're continuing those. Even today, we have something that's called, and the next 3 days, we have something that's called the Employer Network Exchange. I know there's been a lot of emails that have gone out about that. And that was something that was developed this year in lieu of doing another career fair, virtual career fair that we've all done, we're all struggling with, we're all trying to get our students to do that. This is one that says it's sort of a showcase for top employers across the country, for students, our member school students across the country in Canada. So that's exciting. That's happening for the next 3 days. But what I'm most excited about, right? I mentioned, you know, there's still strong need for connecting and networking. What I'm most proud of what's happening is the work that's going around our conference that's being planned right now for April, right? And it's under the tagline of we're back, because our intention is to be in person, right? And the excitement around that and the excitement of what's being done for the conference in Alexandria in terms of what's going to be offered is just amazing. I would challenge everybody to go onto the website and take a look at just at a glance agenda that's out there right now and some of the exciting things and some of the activities that are being planned. I mean, we're down there in right outside of D.C., and we've got some exciting things that are planned. And there's a lot of buzz in the town, if you will, for people to jump on and talk about what it is that we do. And people just want to be back together again. So that's really what I'm excited about going forward and hope that everybody can join us there in Alexandria in April.
I think it's going to be a fantastic conference. And Dave, I think that you're right. You know, I think you and I have even talked about this offline a little bit, that the pandemic has been terrible for a lot of reasons, particularly for higher education. But I think that there are some silver linings that we've had to learn. We've all had to pivot and learn how to do what we're doing right now, which is to interact in a virtual space. And I can see some legacy being here after the pandemic ends, which is hopefully soon. All that said, Dave, I agree with you that people are thirsty to get back and shake hands and make eye contact with people and have a coffee or have a drink and just get back to some sense of normal human interaction. And so for that reason, I think the conference coming up here in Alexandria is going to be off the charts, not just in terms of the agenda and what we're going to be sharing there, but just because people are so desperate to get back and see their old friends and learn stuff in a face-to-face way.
Mike, I'll tell you, just to piggyback on that real quick, I've been a part of conference planning for a while, right? I was the conference chair when we were down in Charleston. And at this stage, this early on in the planning process, we already have more sponsorship commitment than we've ever had. Wow. Right? That goes to show you what's to come, right? Mm-hmm. There's excitement building around this. So I'm happy and excited to see what's to come here.
Yeah, same here. So Dave, one question that we like to ask all of our guests, and this question has become a little tougher to answer now that we're, before the pandemic, this question was a little bit easier to answer. But if you're imagining looking into the future for experiential learning, work integrated learning, and that sort of sphere of education, where do you see the field in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now?
That is the pandemic has thrown a little bit of a wrench into this one. But I'll use an example of what it is that I do in the day-to-day here at Wilmington University. If you take a look at the work that the committee has done with diversity, equity, and inclusion, right, that's always something that, you know, we've even made that a strategic initiative of CEIA, right? Well, how do we as professionals, how does that play in our everyday? And I truly see experiential learning, work integrated learning as the conduit to employment, especially after the pandemic, as we see right now. We've had to make adjustments on the fly. We've had to figure out ways to get people to interview online more so than we used in the past. It used to be sort of one-offs, et cetera, but now it's become the mainstream, right? Mm-hmm. So I see it being a huge part of what it is that we're gonna be doing for us changing to this global workforce, if you will. Mm-hmm. But what I do on a day-to-day basis is try to to live to that end, if you will, and try to incorporate experiential learning into the learning cycle. Now, I know I mentioned that in a little line earlier in this podcast, but what does that mean? In the past, you know, cooperative education and internships, apprenticeships, et cetera, used to be used as just a tool or an exercise as it pertains to our education, right? And what I've been taking great strides in terms of that 360 degree view and working and leveraging things with faculty members and actually becoming a faculty member within the College of Business and teaching these types of courses is, okay, how do we embed this into the curriculum in a way that becomes more a part of the accepted learning cycle, right? Mm-hmm. And really the word that comes to mind to me is engagement through experience, cases, reflection, and application, right? Those are the words that really come to mind when you think about that. So one of the things that we've been able to do, and this is very new. I mean, even half of this strategic plan is happening in January. So we've been able to get on the docket for curriculum committee is to embed experiential learning into the core curriculum. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not just elective space or something of that nature. And we all know this conversation that we've had, right? But it's been being embedded into the actual core curriculum for a number of programs at Wilmington University. When I say that, I mean majors, right? So how does that work? What are you talking about here? And I feel that the whole field of experiential learning is going to probably be going this direction, right? So not only are we awarding credit for people's credentials and they may align to certain courses, et cetera, and then that's a real transcribable event for somebody coming in. Well, how can we do the same as it pertains to work integrated learning, right? In terms of internships, cooperative education, apprenticeships, et cetera. So one of the biggest, I guess, hurdles, right, that I used to come up against was, and you heard me describe Wilmington University earlier as it's basically not a non-traditional, I mean, it's a non-traditional age student that we have versus the traditional age, right? It's somewhere around 60-40 split in terms of Wilmington University. So one of the biggest objections that I heard was, well, most of our students are already working. So how could we possibly require them to do an internship or co-op, et cetera? So I put some strong thought into that and said, okay, first of all, how do you play in curriculum when it comes to co-op and internship? Is one way, and we can have a conversation offline about this, is you can turn co-op or internship into a modality of course,
yeah,
right? And that changes it and it gets it out of academic curriculum discussions and battles, and we all know how faculty senates go, et cetera. So that just says, okay, you can turn this one particular course into a co-op modality. There you have it. You've avoided right. any type of curriculum battles. But here's the way we worked around that one objection, which was our students are already working. We said, okay, let's create, and we call it EXP, experiential learning, right? That's the name of the course. It's a 480 course, so it's an upper level course. And really what it is, it's an experiential learning course consistent of projects, case studies, reflections, and on-the-job applications that folks can do if they're already working.
Oh, cool.
That is considered experiential in nature, right? So to embed this into these, we have 17 different majors that we're embedding this into, where now it's going to be required, meaning that, all right, students, you're either going to do an internship or you're going to do this experiential learning course at where you already work.
Smart.
Okay. And we have people that during the pandemic, we had to adjust on the fly that were laid off, right? In the middle of doing this 480 course. So we had to say, okay, what are we going to do? So that's when we went out to industry and we were to find case studies, et cetera, so that if something like that were to happen, you lost your position, we can still give you a worthwhile course that's built on case studies, application and reflection, if you will, in a more of a classroom setting, mm-hmm. right? So that no longer do I have the objection of, well, our students are already working. Well, that's fine. I can go this other avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then for those, again, Michael, it's playing into the 360 degree view of experiential learning. Right. So that's basically been the lens of which we've looked through everything.
Dave, that is great. As always, you're a forward-thinking individual, which is what makes you a good president of CEIA. For listeners that want to reach out to you and learn more about your work, learn more about CEIA, perhaps learn more about Wilmington, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Really, the fastest way is email for me. I'm old school as it pertains to that, and or LinkedIn. They can look me up on LinkedIn and get connected there. I do check both. As everybody else has their emails on their hip, if you will.
Yep.
So david.c.caffo@wilmu.edu truly is the best way to reach out at first.
Yeah. That's great. Well, Dave, thank you for your time today. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I can't wait until the conference in Alexandria. I've never been to that location, and I hear it's fantastic. And more so, I look forward to the agenda that I've seen of what we're going to be covering during that face-to-face meeting.
Alexandria is beautiful, so it's worth it just for that.
I cannot wait. So Dave, and our listeners, on behalf of Experience Magazine Podcast, we thank you for listening. Signing off here is Michael Sharp for my co-host, Eric Allenson, and our super producer, Julius Freeman. Thanks, everybody.